It's time for Twig this week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here visiting from his folks' house in Florida, where it's snowing, apparently. And from Yorkshire, England, where it's not snowing, apparently. Kevin Marks joins us as we talk about the latest from Google and, of course, all around the world. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 438, recorded Wednesday, January 3rd, 2018. Netzwerk Durchsetzungsgesetz. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the internet with Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis. He is in Florida visiting family for this brand new year. Hello, Jeff.
Hello there. How are you?
Professor.
Welcome back.
I was going to call you the president of journalism, but he's the professor of journalism. Maybe the president of journalism, buzzmachine.com.
I'm hoping to make the president's worst in journalism awards next Monday.
I can't. He announced he's going to do awards for the best fake news. He is a TV star. He's a reality TV star. I mean, this is like
he likes giving himself awards.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Hey, look who's over here on my right, Mr. Kevin Marks, visiting us.
Hi there.
From the UK, indieweb.org. Hi, Kevin. Last time you were on the show, we kept you up way past your bedtime. I won't do that this time.
Thanks very much.
Kevin,
my bedtime is still fairly late, to be honest.
Is it snowy? You're in Yorkshire. Is it snowy?
It has been, but not at the moment. We had a lot of snow just before Christmas, but it's been raining since. So
ironically, there's snow in Florida, not where Jeff is, but in some of Florida, and no snow in Yorkshire. And you say there's global warming. I kid you not. This is crazy cold. A cyclone bomb is about to hit the New England region.
Just as I fly into it tomorrow.
Oh no, you're going home tomorrow?
I hope so.
Well, this is the global warming thing. It's the disruption of the polar vortex. That's why you're getting these huge waves of cold running down.
Oh, Kevin Marks, don't give us your British logic.
All of this stupid science. Come on, knock it off.
The polar vortex normally keeps the cold air at the pole. Because it's warmed up a bit, it's sort of leaking out again because the vortex isn't as strong. Oh. That's why the East Coast is frozen.
We're getting a polar vortex.
The scary one for us is the Atlantic conveyor. That's the thing that means that Europe is actually warmer than America despite being north of it. And when that breaks down, it gets really cold here. That happened 2 or 3 years ago.
Would you like to see Google's smiles of 2017? Should we start with the smiles of 2017?
Nice.
Google's tribute to selfies. A photo collage. Where can I find this? Oh, is it not doing it? Oh, do you do it of your own? Oh. So I have to go to my photos and see if it's done it for me. I see. Do I have smiles? No. Oh, it would be in the assistant, though.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I haven't seen this.
No. I'm sad to say there's no smiles.
Do I have any?
He doesn't look like he's smiling. That's the grump of the year. did anybody else get one?
I haven't got smiles. No, look at my assistant. No.
All right.
I just got like lots of pictures of me walking the dogs, and
you'll get one.
My son ice skating in 2010.
Yeah, I like those flashbacks. Those are fun. What you won't
I
get
remember
anymore?
All the whiteboards of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You did. Yeah, all the whiteboards you took pictures of. God. What you won't be getting any of is the Pixel C. It is no longer in the Google store. And I know you, this, it's, I didn't believe it. It's 2 years old. I know you love this
tablet. I do. I've been using my Pixel Book instead, but I have right next to me a Pixel C, which was one of my three backups for getting on the show today.
And you're on a Mac, sad to say. You're on your son's Mac.
Yeah, I know. My son's Mac, and he's out on a movie. Otherwise, I wouldn't be on it. And I actually have a backup Pixel C. I was given one at some point, and I got a spare keyboard for it, so I'm set for another year or two.
So the question, I guess, you know, when you see this is, well, maybe they're dropping it because they have something to replace it with. There was always the rumor that the Pixel C was not designed to run Android or was designed to run some strange hybrid of Android or maybe Google Chrome OS, but that none of that was to be.
Well, and now with Fuchsia coming to the Pixel Book, who knows what Google's OS plans are?
Yeah, it's hard to say what Fuchsia is exactly.
No one knows. Yeah. No one knows.
Targeted devices are the Acer Switch Alpha 12 and the Intel NUC, according to the Fuchsia documentation.
Do you have a Pixel Book or no?
I do. I like my Pixel Book.
So you could install Fuchsia.
Okay. I guess I will.
Yeah, I guess you're going to have to now.
Yeah. I don't even know what Fuchsia does.
What it does. Yeah. I know. I don't think anybody does.
So you have to put your device into developer mode. That's not surprising. Then you boot into Chrome OS at the welcome screen, press Control-Alt-Refresh F3 to enter a command shell, enter Kronos as the user with a blank password. This is all normal. Ah, you have to re-enable USB boot. Okay, I've done all this. To install Linux in a Chromebook, you do all this.
Right.
And then I guess you've somewhere got Fuchsia and you've put it on a USB key so you can install it. All right. I promise you by next week I will do it.
All right. We'll see
tell us what you see.
There's no applications for it, I would assume.
I don't even. It's got a lot of language support, it looks like.
Well, I assume it'll have a build of Chrome.
That's true.
Yeah. Code of conduct. How do I get started? Individual. Zircon is the microkernel underlying Fuchsia. Here's the Fuchsia book, but this is all for developers. Fuchsia is not Linux, it says. Okay.
Okay.
It's running on not a Linux kernel, a Zircon kernel. And this is the details of the kernel. Speaking of kernels.
You can write code in Dot or in Rust. That's
yeah, I like Rust.
Mainstream there, yeah.
Yeah. What's Dot?
Dart is the supposed...
Oh, Dart. Replacement
for JavaScript.
Yeah. Both come... Dot.
Dart.
Rust comes from the Mozilla Foundation. Doesn't Dart also come from Mozilla? Who does Dart come from?
No, Dart was Google's one. It was one of the internal projects trying to replace JavaScript.
Right.
And
Rust is a real systems programming language designed to replace C and C++. So
yes.
That's a good... I think those are decent choices. Speaking of kernels, the battle royal has begun over the we-don't-know-much-about-it Intel kernel flaw. This is the story that began it all from the Register. Kernel memory leaking, Intel processor design flaw forces Linux Windows redesign. Linux has I think most of the information comes from the Linux development, which is being done in public. Although Microsoft says we have already patched Windows for this. The scary thing is this Register article says that all Intel processors will have to be patched on all computers, and jeez. The impact of the patch, which involves doing more memory paging, will slow these computers down from 5 to 30%. Intel today responded saying, well, A, it's not just us. Intel says it's working with many other technology companies, including AMD, ARM Holdings. But by the way, Intel stock plummeted while ARM stock went up this morning. Because of this, Intel believes these exploits do not have the potential to corrupt, modify, or delete data. Based on the analysis to date, this is Intel talking. This is not what the Register said. Many types of computing devices with many different vendors, processors, and operating systems are susceptible to these exploits. These are very fuzzy words. Intel is making this statement today because of current inaccurate media reports, but they don't say exactly who or what is inaccurate. They also say, contrary to some reports, any performance impacts are workload dependent and for the average computer user should not be significant and will be mitigated over time. All of these sound good, but are so vaguely worded as to not really be meaningful. Yeah, they're workload dependent. Like if you have no workload, you might not notice performance hits. That's one way of interpreting it. For the average computer user, should not be significant. Okay. I don't know who that person is. And will be mitigated over time. They don't say how. Perhaps with the purchase of a new computer. I don't know. So I shouldn't be harsh. I don't mean to be harsh. AMD is responding to Intel saying, no, we don't have this problem. Don't say we have this problem. You have this. This is your problem, not our problem. Meanwhile, nobody knows exactly what the problem is because, for good reasons, security researchers aren't telling anybody. They're trying to get these patches out before the word goes out, which means it's pretty serious.
Yeah. Ars Technica has an explainer that starts walking you through the details of this process of Voodoo. But a lot of this is... Somebody described it on Twitter as, this just illustrates how much witchcraft there is in processors these days. And the thing is that the processors, they used to be simple Voigt Neumann machines where you had like memory and you had a couple of registers and you moved stuff between the two. And now there's layers and layers and layers of caches, but also layers and layers of execution units that will, if there's an if statement, will try both halves of the if statement until they're sure which one is actually going to happen.
Branch prediction, this is called.
Branch prediction, speculative execution, things like that.
Yeah.
So because different bits run at different speeds, they will attempt to execute the code in more than one path and then see which one should resolve further down. And so the suspicion is that you can do timing attacks based on the effects of these different things on caches and potentially extract kernel addresses that way and then access them. But it's not clear what's going on, and we'll have to wait for a proper write-up.
When you hear that, you think perhaps of Rowhammer, which was an Android-specific bug that used timing attacks in a similar way. And they have likened this to Rowhammer. The only reason we know anything is because the Linux patches are being done kind of in public. They're redacting comments and things, but people can look at the patch and say, oh, this seems to be addressing this. I misspoke. Microsoft has... a patch in the Windows Insider program, the betas, and it's been in the beta since November. So Microsoft's known about this for some time, and they say patch Tuesday next week, everybody will get this.
So what, like if you have your grandmother, and
she'll get patched. Her operating system will get patched. No word about what Apple's doing, although there've been a lot of patches lately. Amazon Web Services and Microsoft's Azure are both announcing they'll be down for scheduled maintenance. But we know that these virtualization solutions are vulnerable as well. So while no one's saying why they're going down, this scheduled maintenance is probably something about patching as well.
So since everything's about me, what about Chrome OS?
Yep. But I don't know.
I think the worry is probably more that you'll be able to peek into other processes on the same machine, which is less of an issue for individuals, but a big issue for servers where you'll potentially have processes belonging to other people and stuff can leak sideways that way.
Yeah.
So if you're a cloud provider, that's, you know, there's a presumption that all the lower level page table stuff works and you can build things on top of that isolate one process from another. And if those processes actually belong to different organizations and they shouldn't be able to read each other's data, but that's potentially a problem. So if for someone who's providing, who's basically sharing servers between people in the cloud,
that's really more dangerous. Yeah.
That's actually more dangerous. And there was, if you remember, there was a problem, I'm trying to remember exactly who it was, but there was some kind of cross leakage problem for someone who was running a CDN where people would get each other's cached pages. Do you remember that? That was about 6 mm-hmm. months ago.
Yep.
So that kind of problem could occur, or that kind of thing could be deliberately provoked, where you can peek into other people's processes, and I suspect that's why they're particularly nervous about the cloud server stuff.
By the way, you're right. Peter Bright's article in Ars Technica is the best so far description of this, and he says it specifically affects Intel processors that do speculative execution of Ring 3 code that writes to Ring 0 memory, and that's where the leak happens. But that's all processors since the Pentium Pro, which came out in 1995. So it's a lot. And I'm presuming
AMD
does speculative.
It should be less of an issue for ARM and those that don't have such hairy processor designs.
Right,
but
right.
And nothing needs to be done with the firmware or anything.
Operating. It'll be patched at the operating system level.
It'll be patched at the processor level if they can patch that. That's the other piece.
I suspect that's the long term mitigation.
Code is really hard.
Yeah, that's exactly a plan.
That's why.
But they do that. You know, we've seen processors patched before. It's totally doable. Yeah. But I'm sure it takes a little longer. Peter writes, the impact of this will vary depending on workload. Every time a program makes a call into the kernel to read to the disk, from the disk to send data to the network to open a file, that call will be a little more expensive because of this paging that will have to occur. Programs that don't use the kernel much might see a hit of perhaps 2-3%. But workloads that call the kernel a lot will see much greater performance drop-off. In a benchmark, a program that does virtually nothing other than call the kernel saw its performance drop by 50%. Each call to the kernel took twice as long. So that's not insignificant. When you look at that, then the 30% overall doesn't seem seem out of the picture. That's a big hit. It's a developing story, as they say.
Yep.
So we talked about yesterday in Security Now. Steve Gibson, was very calm, and so I didn't really twig to how serious this could be until I read the Register, and then I thought, this could be a little bit more serious than I thought.
Steve's always calm, right?
No, he'll light his hair on fire if need be. Mm-hmm. If need be. As of January 1st, Google is now blocking YouTube on Amazon devices.
Boys, can't you get along?
Google says, we have a bigger button. why should we expect the tech industry to be more mature than the president? Google stocks blocking on Amazon Fire TV, Echo Show. This is from Variety. In an unusually frank statement, a Google spokesperson squarely blamed Amazon's unwillingness to strike a business deal with Google for this step. We've been trying to reach agreement with Amazon to give consumers access to each other's products and services, but Amazon doesn't carry Google products like Chromecast and Google Home, doesn't make Prime Video available for Google Cast users, and last month stopped selling some of Nest's latest products. Given this lack of reciprocity, we are no longer supporting YouTube on Echo Show and Fire TV. We hope we can reach an agreement to resolve these issues soon. You've been through this, the cable wars in New Jersey, haven't you, Jeff, where the cable company says, well, ESPN wants too much money, so we're not going to let you watch ESPN. And it's a kind of a game of chicken, of brinksmanship.
It is, and it hurts the customers, and it hurts the brand. And in the long run, shows that they don't care about the customers enough.
But it's also self-destructive for them. I mean, I've got Prime and I've got Netflix. I've got a Chromecast. That's what I would normally use. I've also got a smart TV, and I have to use that for the Amazon Play stuff. But it's a smart TV, which means it's flaky. So at some point, we were watching some series on Amazon, and either Amazon's network flaked out, the smart TV software flaked out, I don't know what. So I had to go and get my Chromebook, a video cable, plug it into the TV, watch it on that, and faff around for ages because Amazon refuses to support Chromecast from Android at all. So I have to do it with a physical cable. And it's like, it makes me want to watch Netflix instead of Amazon, which is pretty stupid from Amazon's point of view, I would have thought. Netflix has been good at, we will run everywhere. We're very, because they don't have, because that is their business. Whereas Amazon has a strategy tax on Prime Video because they actually care more about selling stuff through the store. And they did say that they sold more Fire Sticks than anything except the Echo over Christmas. So,
but you know why they're selling Fire Sticks, right? I don't know if this has taken over in the UK, but it's all the rage in the States. People are putting Kodi, they're hacking the Fire Sticks, putting Kodi on it, and then using the Fire Sticks to watch pirated TV shows.
Oh, no.
It's massive. You go on eBay, go anywhere. We were hearing about this on a couple of weeks ago. Owen J.J. Stone was talking about a friend of his who he was at great pains to emphasize was not too bright, who would go to the kids' softball games and say, "Fire sticks, get your patched fire sticks here." He was selling Amazon Fire sticks patched so they could pick up pirate programming. And Amazon's done, by the way, absolutely nothing to stop this, as far as I can tell. We should mention, it's not Kodi's fault. Kodi is a legit platform, but there are Kodi plugins that let you do this. And if Amazon's admitting Fire Stick sales were through the roof this Christmas, that's as much as admitting because of piracy.
So if I patch a Fire Stick to run Chromecast, that might solve my problem.
Oh, well, you can run Kodi on it, KODI, right? Which is the old Xbox Media Center. And it has plugins that let you, you know, watch pirated streams and so forth. When we were in the Caribbean, you know, I had a skipper because I didn't want to sail this boat myself. His name was Jellybean.
Good.
Skipper Jellybean. I get on the boat. He goes, "Oh, man." I said, "Hi. My name's Leo. What's your name?" He said, "Call me Jellybean." He was great. Love Jellybean. But he was very interested in a hacked Fire Stick. And I wasn't telling him about it, but the kids I was with knew all about it and were saying, "Oh, yeah." And they said, "Here's how you get it." And before we would, at the end of the trip, before we could leave, Jelly Bean says, "Now, don't give me the right down here what I should get, man." For the So it's, we're spreading goodwill to the rest of the world. By the way, boy, you know, they talk about Puerto Rico and almost 50% still.
Yeah, how bad
power.
Was it down there?
At British Virgin Islands, just devastating. Jelly, if I'll call him by his first name, Jelly had been a captain sailing the Caribbean since 1989, and he had intentionally he lost his roof. He was telling us the story of he took his wife and his 8-year-old daughter, and they huddled in the bathroom, and he heard this big boom as the roof blew off, and then the back door and the front door blew off, not just blew open, blew off, and the refrigerator in the kitchen was blown through the back door and ended up 2 blocks down the road. It's amazing he's alive. But he had not gone around to see the devastation, so it was like watching it through his eyes was very much getting a sense of this. And it's just flattened. I mean, we went to an island, he says, "Not there anymore." It's bizarre.
Truly devastated. Yeah. It's not an overuse of the term.
No. And there's no power. I mean, nobody's got power. Everybody, any restaurant or business we went to was running on a generator. The amazing thing is these people are so spirited and generous. They were giving us stuff. And I was like, what? I was blown away. It was very, and there hardly was anybody there, which was, I guess, kind of amazing.
Because the other thing, it's a problem. I was supposed to go to a conference in Puerto Rico, and you know, they moved it to Miami, and I just felt bad because there was money that's needed there.
Yeah. I was actually glad we were there, and they were very glad to see us. But I felt a little guilty, but they were very glad to see us, I think. I don't know. I got sidetracked. Sorry about that.
That's what we do here.
That's what we do. It's the Sidetrack Show. So, great article. It seems highly speculative in VentureBeat, speculating that Apple, because of the new tax law, might actually be preparing to repatriate. Well, I don't know. I mean, according to the Financial Times, and I can't read it because it's behind a paywall, Tim Cook says Apple to repatriate overseas cash pile next year. Part of that is the new tax rate under the new tax law of repatriation is 15.5%. Tim Cook said, "We'll do it if you can give us 10, but I guess 15.5 is enough." But that gives them a big pile of U.S. cash. And so this article by Jeremy Horowitz is about, well, what might they do with that? And city analysts pick Netflix or Disney as an acquisition target. City says Netflix is the most likely, partly because it's a lot cheaper, but also it's a lot easier to absorb. Disney is huge. Apple would actually have to need more money. They'd have to borrow money to do it. And
if Jobs were alive, I'd buy the Disney more out of
I personal. Think Disney would be a great acquisition. Yeah, Jobs, and I guess his wife, Lorene, his widow, Lorene, was for a long time the largest shareholder of Disney. I don't know if they still are because Disney bought Pixar.
Right.
And Robert Iger, Disney CEO, is on Apple's board. So there's always been kind of this relationship. Apple would need to spend $262 billion to purchase Disney at a 40% premium over its current enterprise value. That's about 2 to 3 times more than Netflix. But wouldn't you rather have Marvel and Star Wars and this theme parks? And I mean, that could be huge, huge for Apple, right?
It's also, but it's also a bit of a lead weight too, in some ways. That why go into old media businesses?
Well, Horowitz also points out that that Disney has 195,000 employees. That's more than Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big apple to bite. So I don't.
Netflix.
I fear
Apple would ruin Netflix.
Apple wants a content, but they're not willing. They've only spent $1 billion to make content this year.
Let alone, you know, $7 billion or whatever Netflix is spending.
Netflix is doing eight.
Eight.
But boy, well, you do is spend a couple hundred billion on Disney, and you're set for life.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a profitable enterprise. You know, of the top 9 box office movies of all time, 3 are the last 3 Star Wars movies.
Jesus. You also get Hulu, by the way, if you buy Disney.
You get Hulu because of the Murdoch, the Fox acquisition. That'd be interesting. I, you know, from our point of view, we're rooting for, you know, the big news story. That would be one we could dine out on for a few weeks. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that one. And frankly, I'm still not sure that they're going to repatriate their money. Meanwhile, Google moved $19.2 billion to Bermuda. 16 billion euros in 2016. This is according to regulatory filings in the Netherlands. This is the Dutch sandwich we've heard so much about. Tasty. The double Irish, just like Apple, Google uses the double Irish and the Dutch sandwich to shield the majority of its international profits from taxation. One of the things, one of the things Apple does, I don't know if Google does this, but Apple is very active about this. They actually transfer intellectual property rights to Ireland so that they have to pay a license fee, take American profits, send it to Ireland, thereby avoiding the tax in America and paying the very low Irish corporate tax. I don't know if Google's doing that or not. But what happens is you shift revenue from an Irish – this is what Google's doing. Shift revenue from an Irish subsidiary to a Dutch company with no employees and then on to a Bermuda mailbox owned by another Irish company. 7% more in 2016 than the year before. Be interesting again. You know, all these companies, Facebook does it, Google does it, Apple does it, lots of companies do it. They all say, look, it's the tax law. We're just doing what's legal. We comply with the tax laws of every country, and we're doing what's legal, but we also have, you know, a responsibility to pay as little tax as we legally have to. You wouldn't expect us to pay more, would you? Although didn't Facebook say that we're going to stop doing that? We're going to pay more taxes in the U.S.?
Well, didn't the EU fine Ireland not charging Apple enough tax?
Yes, that's right. And this happened to Google. That was over Apple. This has happened to Google, too. Last year, Google escaped a €1.12 billion French tax bill after a court ruled its Irish subsidiary, which collects revenue for ads the company sells in France, has no permanent base in the country. And the EU is exploring ways to make them pay.
But this is all up to those governments to negotiate.
Right.
It's not up to the companies to decide, you know, where to pay. They have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to reduce taxes and increase profit, and the companies, the countries are competing with each other, and they should do something about this. It is unfair. I agree, but it's not up to the companies to decide. This is up to the governments.
Yeah,
that's their job.
Well, the Irish corporate tax rate now is 12.5%. The new tax bill says corporate tax rate in the U.S. is now down to 21%. I don't know if that's low enough that people will consider repatriating their
depends
income
on what they want to do with it.
Google saves.
They're not going to do it for the sake of principle. They're going to do it if they have something they want to buy or something they want to do here.
According to Bloomberg, Google would have saved $3.7 billion in taxes in 2016 doing that tax transfer. But they hold $60 billion overseas. Anyway, I think that the new tax bill might change that. We'll see.
Plus, I think.
Go ahead, Kevin. Sorry. I mean, the thing is, this is you're saying they're required to this to the shareholders. I mean, this is Charlie Strauss's thing about we have malevolent AIs and their corporations. he gave a speech at C4 this week. I was sticking it in the chat or whatever. But basically, he wrote a thing called Invaders from Mars a few years ago, which said we did this strange thing sometime in the 18th century where we said that we can have non-human entities that we treat as humans. They're called corporations. And they have this weird ability to be immortal and transfer assets between themselves and move between countries. And now they're at the point where they're taking over the laws and rewriting the laws to suit them. So all the people fretting about AIs taking over are sort of missing the wood for the trees, because actually we have these sort of very slow moving AIs that are actually artificial beings that are distorting everything in the world because they behave this way.
Charlie Strauss, who's a sci-fi author, seems to be taking Neal Stephenson's mantle. He used to go do those crazy speeches at South By. This is apparently going to now it's going to be Charlie Strauss in this talk.
No, it was Bruce Sterling.
Bruce Sterling, that's right.
All right.
In this talk, Charles Strauss will give a rambling, discursive, and angry tour of what went wrong with the 21st century, why we didn't see it coming, where we could expect it to go next, and a few suggestions for what to do about it if we don't like it. It's his keynote at the 34th Chaos Communication Congress.
It's probably easier to read it than to watch it because he's a writer rather than a performer, but
right.
It's and also he can put links in the post. But this is his basic thesis, is that Elon Musk is worried about AI taking over, and he's ignoring the fact that he runs three AIs of his own that are doing strange things to the world as well. So he talks about the idea of the paperclip maximizer is the thing that people are scared of about AIs, that they'll set an AI going whose job is to make paperclips, and they'll turn everything into paperclips.
Which, by the way, is an awesome game. I highly recommend.
Yes.
I spent several days making paperclips.
But he says, Tesla is a battery maximizer. Its whole goal is to make more batteries and turn wow. everything into batteries.
Oh, interesting. So it's like the paperclip.
Yeah, and the point, and his point is that companies have overt goals and notional controls, but their instrumental goals is maximizing revenue, and they'll do, as Jeff was saying, they will do things to do that, whatever the consequences for everyone else. So they will do that even if it means all their money is somehow in Bermuda rather than paying taxes where they should.
Right.
Where the taxes are designed to be. And I don't think they get a pass for saying, well, we just found a way to hack the laws to do this. Because they're obviously skirting. If they're actually generating, they're not really generating the revenue for intellectual property in Bermuda. They're generating the revenue by selling advertising services in populated countries that actually have tax.
Now you got me making paperclips.
Start making paperclips.
This is Nick Bostrom's thought experiment about what happens if you create an AI that's optimized to make paperclips and nothing else. Well, it eventually, and I, by the way, I proved it, turns all the matter in the universe into paperclips. And I got there. I did it. But the good news at the end of that, no spoilers, but at the end of that game, you get an option to continue on. Let's put it that way. Well, what are we going to do? I mean, this is late stage capitalism. This is where we have brought ourselves.
Well, that's his point. It's very hard to know how to fix this because they tend to adjust legislation to suit them as well. So
yeah, they have so much power now. They bought Congress, and so there's nothing we can do about it.
And what we get is them fighting over different laws that would benefit different companies.
Right. And of course, part of that was just the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court that said corporations can donate unlimited funds to political campaigns.
Yep.
Yep.
That pretty much sealed the deal.
Yep.
Speaking of sealing the deal, Logan Paul, God dang it. This is the YouTube, nihilistic YouTube star who is, he and his brother have done things like burn mattresses in the swimming pool of their Beverly Hills home to generate YouTube views. They kind of they took the cake on this one. They he was in the famous suicide forest in Japan and posted a video of a suicide, which I won't show, of course. In fact, it's, he took it down after 3 days and 6.7 million views. But, you know, I think the point is clear here. A, you, as some have pointed out, no AI is going to be able to find that video and block it. And there is an intense race now to become the next most extreme thing. You saw it last year with PewDiePie and his racist stuff.
Let me try to find some good news in this, which is that our norms survived this. That he was roundly condemned at all quarters. PewDiePie, he had to take it down. He had
PewDiePie
to apologize.
Was both, and Logan both, Paul were, yeah.
And might have ruined his chances to make money. That's up to YouTube. I think they should ruin it. And so, you know, there are limits, and that's what we're setting. It's what we're negotiating. It's what we're trying to figure out. Now, can we automate those limits? That's hard at scale. The scale where we are is very hard. But norms won. Civilization won. Civilization didn't say, oh, okay, what's the big deal? It's a video. No, civilization said, F you,
right,
Mr. Paul.
Right.
And made him take it down.
But do you think he'll have long-term harm, or maybe it will, in fact, help build his brand?
Well, that's same with PewDiePie. That's up to, in great measure, the platforms, whether they choose to have their brands associated with the likes of this. If I were a brand, I would say no. You know, one strike, you're out. No.
PewDiePie is still on YouTube. All they did was they took him off of their VIP advertising program, which did cost him millions of dollars in ad revenue. Mm-hmm. He only made $15 million last year.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's such pressure. It's like link bait. And when it was mainstream media, I think there were, you know, societal restraints that kept them from going too crazy. I mean, they went crazy enough with reality TV and stuff. But I feel like on YouTube, first of all, it happened so fast that
second, that's the issue.
Yeah, it happened so fast that it's, I mean, 3 days he gets 6.7 million views. Those views cannot be taken back. I don't know how many kids saw it. I don't know how many kids were damaged by it or upset by it.
Well, another question there is how long did it take people to report this? That's to me the most disturbing part. And then the second is how long did it take YouTube to react?
Apparently it was reported. Right. Some say it was reported and YouTube did not react.
And that's that's bad on YouTube.
You know, if it's ramping up that fast, it would probably be in the top, you know, fraction of a percent of videos on YouTube, and so therefore should be on a to review queue quickly.
Right.
You know, YouTube has a lot of videos and you can't review them all. We know that. But it should be able to review the ones that are ramping up the trending.
Well, you both have teenage sons or young sons as I do. Henry's 23.
Still just they're not teenagers more, but 21 and 22.
Yeah, and same Jake is about that age.
25.
So I'm on the boat with these kids, and I'm watching the videos they like, and they have a very they've developed a very extreme taste for videos on YouTube. That's this has pushed them to a more extreme taste, and the stuff they watch is and they were telling me about the people they like. They watch a guy who eats hot peppers, hottest pepper possible. Mm-hmm. When you watch him in agony as he's eating this pepper, they love that. They laugh, they howl. There's some other guy who is just completely an anarchist. He has a beautiful set, starts his show. Before he gets his first guest on, he destroys the set and then does the show. And there's this appetite for more and more extreme stuff. And the kids eat it up. They love it. That's what they want. And that, of course, when they try to watch something like this, it's like, well, nothing happens. You didn't blow anything up. What's going on?
Well, even David Letterman back in the day threw things off the roof.
Yeah.
You know, and I have immense respect for him. But, yeah, he was in essence doing a baby version of the same thing.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that mainstream media, because they were run – I'm not praising mainstream media by any means.
Right, right.
But
right.
Because they were run by big corporations like General Electric, they had a reputation to maintain, there was always a little bit of a lid on this. I mean, obviously, Google and YouTube are big corporations who have a reputation to maintain, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's such incentive to get more and more extreme. I don't see it going the other way. I don't see it calming down.
No, and it's the issue of scale too. It's that case on YouTube of the ridiculous made up videos.
Yeah.
That figured out how to manipulate the system.
Right.
Yeah.
The
stuff like synthesized kids' cartoon videos
Right.
Generated by algorithms.
About that. Yep.
That stuff is
it's creepy. You know,
there's a sort of, and this is in Charlie's talk as well. There's people are now starting to throw weird, weird AI machinery at these things to try and make stuff up that's more convincing.
Right.
But also they're attacking, it's attacking at multiple levels. It is this weird thing of what they're actually trying to do is game other computers. So it's sort of adversarial AI fighting AI. They're trying to game the ranking algorithm in YouTube. They're trying to game the censorship algorithm in YouTube as well. They're trying to produce something that looks enough like the things that should be let through, but will fool the ranking algorithms and therefore generate ad revenue. It's very, very strange.
Nick Bostrom was sort of right, but it's instead of paperclips, it's the 4chaning of the world. The entire world is just going to turn into 4chan.
But this is why I'm going to go back to my good news thing. There was also a study out this week that said that, all of the talk about fake news in my world, and, I've got money to deal with it, said, the impact is actually very small.
Oh, I hope that's true.
Another study, these were both on the rundown, said that, let's see if I got this one straight. This one said that when, and I'm not picking on Trump in this case or Trump voters in this case, but when Trump fans were exposed to stories about the Russian connections, their opinion of Trump and trust in him decreased, which is to say that news has an impact on people. Mm-hmm. You put the two together and there is an opportunity for a flight to quality here. There is an opportunity for us to negotiate our norms for an improved society. You're going to hear my spiel for the 100th time. It's early days, 1479, Gutenberg years. We're figuring this out. We're smart as a civilization. We will figure it out. Society's not in the dumper quite yet.
Okay.
But
I hope you're right. That's all I can say.
But the challenge is building, the problem is it's the same as the corporate tax thing. We have these twisted incentives that are being powered through by both real AIs and these sort of synthetic slow-moving AIs that are corporations that maximize the wrong things and don't really care about it until we find a way to go and beat them up. And the challenge is how do we find the way to re-incentivize them to do things that would actually be useful? What levers do we have? Because they're the ones who are gaming our attention. It's partly a sort of beginning of the year thing, but I am seeing a number of people saying, okay, that's it. I'm switching off Facebook and Twitter and I'm going to go and do something else. The CEO of Twitter spent 10 days off the internet on a meditation retreat. Huh?
Sorry, Kevin, trying to put in a punchline there. You're reading too much of The Guardian.
Oh, come on. People are switching off. I think there are people switching off.
This is things people are saying in conversation groups and places.
Well, I'll give you my son and his friend. I was with two 23-year-olds. They don't use Facebook. They barely use it. They use Snapchat like crazy all the time. And I said, but wait a minute. All these videos and stuff you're sending back of the vacation, they're going to be gone forever. They said, yeah, we don't care.
I gave up Facebook as the new I only watch PBS.
All right.
But the point is that they've stopped using Facebook. They use Facebook as LinkedIn. They don't use it as
They're on Facebook, but they don't spend time on it. They use it as LinkedIn. They use it as a way to get people's addresses and stuff as a phone book. Mm-hmm.
So, but also as a way to perform your public persona rather than your private conversations.
So yes. Last night. The president got in a Twitter war with Kim Jong-un. Trump tweeted, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has just stated the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him, I too have a nuclear button, but it is much bigger and more powerful one than his, and my button works. Immediately, people went, in fact, somebody put... projected up on the side of the building at Twitter headquarters, hashtag Jack or at Jack is hashtag complicit. Immediately, people said, "Well, wait a minute! Aren't those death threats? Isn't that violating Twitter's rules? Shouldn't the president be banned?" And then I saw another tweet that said, "Anybody who thinks Twitter is ever going to ban the president of the United States from Twitter is not playing with a full deck."
So two things on that. I mean, one is this Michael Wolff stuff that's come out. I think it's just been published.
Yes.
I don't know what time it is there. Yeah. So he's basically – Michael Wolff is a kind of sleazy journalist guy who's very good at schmoozing. And apparently just schmoozed his way into the White House and chatted to everyone and has now written down everything that they said to him and has published it. And it's, you know –
This is the Bannon comments, right?
No,
lots more than that. It's his book. Katie Tour just put up one where she had the book and marked it and said that his goal was to get his friends' wives in bed. There's
whose goal?
Kinds.
Whose goal?
Trump's.
Let me just ask a couple of questions
because, of course, this is all over the news right now.
It is.
Because Trump read it and then said, well, Bannon really didn't work for me or something. He has nothing to do with his presidency. Apparently, there were no campaign managers on the Trump campaign at all because is Wolf to be trusted or is he making stuff up?
Wolf has a mixed reputation, but he does get access, making access journalists nervous. He recreates entire conversations. I read there's a New York Magazine has the longest excerpt out there, and huge conversations between Bannon and Priebus and this kind of stuff. And who knows what he got where? Do you take him on?
So this is the equivalent of the Trump dossier.
Well, what he says in the piece is that. The leaking is Trump himself, because what Trump does is phone up people and complain about them to other people and back and forth. And so he just worked out who he was phoning and talked to them. And because Trump isn't very good at saying on the record, off the record, he was able to, you know, go and listen to them and nod and be polite and pay attention and then write down what they said and then triangulate it across different people.
Who was he working for when he did this? The New York Magazine or?
No, he's written a book.
So he just wandered in and said, "I'm writing a book."
He had a near permanent position on a couch in the West Wing.
What?
And that he could go hang out.
Oh my God!
This is Wolf. Wolf also did. You know, Wolf went to the first Foursquare conference, and it was all off the record, very clear. He just violated the heck out of that. Used as a lead, wrote the Twilight of the Moguls out of that. Then somehow he got access to Murdoch. Did a book on Murdoch. Murdoch wasn't happy. Then he did his gossip columns for the likes of Vanity Fair and such. And this is Michael. He does this. He's a good writer. He's snarky. And, you know, there's no attribution. He's recreating dialogue. You know, who knows? But it's going to be provocative as hell. It's going to be out there like crazy. Over the next five news cycles are going to be all this. And then Trump's going to react, as he already has. So he's now accusing Bannon of being insane.
We live in a reality show. This is now a reality show.
Which is what the New York Times said. That's why everybody's having a fit about the New York Times saying, oh, isn't that cute? He turned the presidency into a reality show, as if that was a positive.
There's nothing cute about it, but it's clear that... So this is a book that's going to come out and be a huge bestseller because I'm just reading the New York Magazine article and it's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. On election night, Wolf says Trump looked as if he'd seen a ghost. He didn't think he was going to win. But he knew he would win by becoming the most famous man in the world because of the campaign.
Right, which we always presumed was his strategy.
He says, I don't think about losing. It isn't losing. We've totally won, even before he won. And then he won, and it was, oh, whoa. But at this point, he's got nothing to lose.
Nope. Mm.
So
Don Jr. told a friend that Trump looked as if he had seen a ghost. Melania was in tears and not of joy. Oh my God!
This is my favorite quote. So, in the Trump response about Bannon, in there was this line: "Winning isn't as easy as I make it look." Isn't that the ultimate Trump line?
Wow. Okay.
But that's the thing, you know.
Okay. Wow.
So he is a reality TV person. He is a media hack. That's what he's been doing for the last 30 years, but leveraging media attention into money and deals and using that to shut people up. George Lakoff, the linguist and political analyst, wrote a long sort of thread on Twitter basically saying the more time we spend talking about this stuff, the more we're playing into his narrative, because he thrives on attention and he likes being a reality TV star and he likes talking about ratings and all this stuff. And he says, you know, you've got to reframe it so that you're talking when he says something outrageous and wrong. First, you rebut it, and then you say, "Oh, and by the way, Trump said his usual nonsense." And
so we had Joan Donovan on, and that was really great a couple of weeks ago. And she basically talked about the fact that memes won the election, and that what we have. It isn't even really the reality show presidency. It is the Reddit presidency. It's the 4chan it's the meme driven presidency. And but you think so? To get back into the conversation you started, Jeff, you think that there are signs that this is going to go away and everything's going to be fine?
No, I wouldn't go that far.
I feel like we've gone down the rabbit hole. And it's going to be pretty dark. Yeah, it's going to be pretty hard. For one thing, it's very engaging. The ratings, as Mr. Trump would say, are through the roof.
Yeah, and we've got to accept. I think my problem is this. We have – I just read a what's the conservative magazine? TRO. New Republic.
The New Republic. TNR.
TNR. That's the conservative one. I always get them confused.
No, yes. National Review is the conservative one. New Republic is the whatever Morton Kondracki did to it.
Goldberg and National Review. I'm sorry.
National Review. You know,
So National Review and wrote a piece just saying it's about institutions. So there's no trust and no faith in institutions of any sort anymore, and that's where we are.
That's troubling because it's become very clear to me, and we talked about this before as well, that really all of this is made up. It's like currency. It's like money. Without a faith in you know, a belief in our institutions, a belief that they work, a belief in the rule of law, you have nothing. There's no, it's all made up. It's all a social contract, right?
Exactly, it is. I'm rereading. I'm thinking a lot about this notion of after the mass, and I wrote a piece about that last week, and I'm doing a lot more research. I just ordered a whole pile of books about it, and I think that what we see is a constant desire to return to the institutions we have. I think we've got to accept the reality we have and figure out how to redesign things around that. And the reality we have now is that it's not Walter Cronkite land, and Walter Cronkite was a myth himself. That the shared reality was a myth. What inspired me last week was
yes,
yeah, yeah. And
but if
so,
you don't believe in the myth, then you get in this very dystopian state where anything goes. Do what thou wilt is the whole of the law.
That's kind of where, here's the question: does the needle go too far? Do we have it? This is my point
can it swing back?
The suicide video in the Japanese woods was okay. That's enough. Okay, we found the limit. There it is. That's enough. Boom. Push back. And we push back as society. Are we going to push back on the platforms? Are we willing to have them do this? At the same time, of course, Germany has done this. Another story in the rundown, where of course they have a law where they're going to charge billions of dollars if you leave any fake news or bad stuff up. So what's happening? Satirists are getting taken down off of Twitter. What's the line? What's the limit? We're negotiating this now, but I think we're clearly in a place where we're saying to the platforms, open is not good enough. No, we do want you to do some effort and work on this, and we're going to give you the license to do that. You could do it Germany's way, which we're going to charge you a fortune to make you scared and take down all kinds of stuff, including satire of bad actors, or we can do it through self-regulation. But I think there's an opportunity for a flight to quality. That's my point. And I think it's this whole fake news thing has a desire that advertisers are being pushed to stop supporting this junk. The platforms are being pushed to stop promoting the junk. Do we as a society end up someplace better off? It's hard to say that we improve when we have the likes of what we have happening in Washington. Does it go too far or not? We'll see.
And then there's this. A Twitter user with the handle Swatistic, SWAUTISTIC, threatened to SWAT, that is call the tactical squad, the police, on another user goes by the name of Talent, beginning with a 7. Talent dared someone to SWAT him, tweeted an address, but it wasn't his own address. Swatistic apparently called the Kansas police, said there's a domestic dispute at this address. One person has already been murdered. Several family members are being held hostage. The police showed up. A male came to the front door. As he came to the front door, this is from the Wichita Eagle, report by the police. As he came to the front door, one of our officers discharged his weapon. The man, 28, was killed instantly. He was not talent. He was not related. It was a random address. He didn't even play video games. A family member identified the man shot by the police as Andrew Finch. One of Finch's cousins said Finch didn't play video games. Then Swatistic goes back on Twitter saying he could see on TV the police had fallen for his attack, his SWAT. And he said, I didn't get anyone killed because I didn't pull the trigger. By the way, police in Los Angeles have arrested, they believe, the man responsible, 25-year-old, in connection with that attack.
The argument, who's more at fault?
Well, they're both at fault.
It was Reason Magazine said exactly that. They're both at fault.
They're both at fault.
The police are at fault and the gamers are at fault.
Throw the book at Swatistic if they've got him. And absolutely, the police need to be aware of the fact that swatting happens. We've been swatted. We had the police, Petaluma police, come to the...
Really?
Oh, yeah, a couple of years ago. That's why we have an armed guard. Petaluma police came to our... I didn't talk about it at the time because I didn't want to encourage it. Came to our front door, but they didn't come with weapons drawn and a battering ram. They kind of understood that there's some risks here. We immediately defused the situation. But I did hear the recording. The guy said, I'm going to kill everybody at Twit, and then I'm going to set off bombs and blow up the whole place. And I've already killed three people inside or whatever. I mean, you know, it was, so this happens all the time.
But here's the thing. This goes back again to the, what's his name, Aaron Paul? No.
Aaron Paul, by the way, who's been really good on Twitter.
Taking down all
of these people. The actor Aaron Paul. Logan Paul.
Logan Paul. So the Logan Paul video is the problem we have too. Is people use that to say, society's falling apart. If you extrapolate only from an anecdote like that, from one schmuck like that, then you don't arrive at an accurate view. It's the same problem with press coverage right now of the base, when the majority of the country they don't cover and talk to at all. The extrapolation from the anecdote is a real problem in how we judge society right now and what we choose to do about it.
I agree. Although we know this happens, and I'm quoting from Brian Krebs' article. He's been swatted too, Krebs on security. He was swatted in 2013, and there are more swattings going on all the time. I don't even want to talk about it because I'm afraid of getting swatted again.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Let's find something happier.
All right. The dystopia report continues. let's see. New bill. It's a bill. And as I remember, a bill is not a law. But a new bill, which is the right bill, could finally get rid of these paperless voting machines. Six senators' bipartisan group introduced legislation called the Secure Elections Act. It aims to eliminate these paperless voting machines we've been talking about, promoting routine audits that would dramatically reduce the danger of hacking, including interference from foreign governments. Kamala Harris, our senator from California, James Lankford, Republican from Oklahoma. The Ars Technica writes, the bill reads like a computer security expert's wish list. So let's hope. See, there's hope. Let's hope that the Congress realizes how important this is.
I got to confess, when everybody was going crazy in tech land about the voting machines, I kind of, paranoia, tinfoil hats. I was wrong. Absolutely wrong. We've got to, if we secure nothing else, we've got to secure that. And by the way, the census too coming up, which there's a lot of efforts to go after that. These are the fundamental institutions of a democracy, and they're being threatened. Yeah. So yes, we've got to go overboard to protect them.
Lawrence Norden, an election expert from NYU, says the most important thing about the bill is who's sponsoring it. The bill has three Republican co-sponsors, three Democrats. So this has a shot. We should point out, we talked a lot about election fraud and voter machine hacking before the election last year. And the experts we had on, we did a great triangulation on it. The consensus was, well, yeah, there are problems, but because we have such a heterogeneous system in the United States, every county even has different systems. It'd be very hard to do any mass hacking that would affect the vote. But now, in hindsight, what we realize is because of the Electoral College and the closeness of the votes in general, it only took 40,000 votes. And yep. that wouldn't be yep. a lot of votes to swing. So I think this is really important. And
I think we can get to a point where an election's validity is legitimately called into question. And then what happened? That's the institution.
Then what do you do? Then what do you do?
Yeah. You know, what if
well, then you have to revote?
Well, but we don't have a constant. Unlike you, we don't have a constitution that looks like Gumby. We change it all the time, which is your flexibility that you have, Kevin. We have this thing that's set in ink. And
well, yeah, you guys are set because if you can have elections any old time, all you have to have is a vote of no confidence, and boom, you get to do it over. You get a do over.
Yep,
it's a good argument for the parliamentary system, frankly.
It is.
Well, but also, you know, the voting system here is we have bits of paper that we put X's in boxes.
Oh, that's very good. I want to go back to the one where you dip your thumb in ink.
The open rights group that I'm involved with here spent a long time campaigning against moving to electronic voting here because there was, people can vote online. It's like, no, they can't. Bad. Not reliably. Bad. Not. There isn't a way to do this. Yeah. And we won the argument the last time, but it's coming around again. And now it's like with blockchain,
I really want my vote to rely on the decentralized network.
Yeah, but the point is, the point is bits of paper in boxes that you then split into the piles and measure the height of the piles is actually a fairly good system. It's quite hard to hack. It involves moving things around with trucks. So okay, you can hack it by stealing a bunch of ballots and replacing another bunch of ballots. So you have to watch the
It's hard work. It's hard to do from Russia.
Yes.
CNBC says Amazon is in discussions with consumer brands about, oh no, ads on the Echo. Procter & Gamble, Clorox. Well, it was inevitable, wasn't it? What would they be like? Apparently there are some tests going on. So the report says there may be a range of promotional opportunities on the Echo. One is reportedly a product suggestion on behalf of a brand tied to purchase history. Echo may suggest to a shopper who previously bought Clorox's Pine Sol to consider buying its disinfecting wipes. I see you've bought Pine Sol. Perhaps you'd be interested in these disinfecting wipes. Or if you say, Echo, how do I get red wine out of a carpet? You might say, shout it out. Echo, I'd like to buy some paper towels. Currently, if you say, Echo, I'd like to buy some paper towels, people say, it will say, okay, I can look for a brand like Bounty. What would you like? So maybe this is already
happening.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to happen with media too. You know, play me Frank Sinatra. Wouldn't you prefer Tony Bennett?
Oh, I hope
they really do that. I mean, that's, I want a movie with Katharine Hepburn. Sorry, we don't have any. And that's like,
many people like Katharine Hepburn also like.
I'm not sure who I would be.
Aaron Paul. I don't know.
But that, I literally did that. I searched. I was trying to find. I can't remember the film now. This is this time last year. I searched Netflix for Katharine Hepburn movies, and they had one. It was Desk Set, which is a good movie, and it's about tech.
But
I can see why they kept that one. But they had one Katharine Hepburn movie.
One.
And oh, you old fart, Kevin.
So how do you, there's no ad blocker that can block ads coming from your Amazon Echo. That's you're stuck listening to that ad.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have an Amazon Echo, so I'm safe there, I suppose. But I'm sure my phone will wake up and start offering me things.
So apparently,
you could ask whether this kills advertising.
Yeah. This is,
it's just not feasible. You just can't do it in any form that's going to work.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'd have to, Well, I don't think Amazon could do it in a form that could work. Google could, because Google already knows how to do this. Google is already in the business of
that's a good point.
Understanding when you're searching for something that is like to be a purchase, and that's when they give you ads. So if I search for Katharine Hepburn, they won't try and sell me air freshener or something. But if I search for air freshener, the top row of things will be ways to buy it, because they understand
I'm surprised. According to Amazon's financials, Amazon did ad sales of $1 billion in Q3.
Wow.
So Amazon is not completely not in the ad business.
No, of course, because they're in this weird ad business because they do retargeting. So because they understand your purchase, they can give you a buy now link. So you know, my son's working for a game company and a physical game company. So they're selling physical objects through Amazon. And so a lot of the stuff that works for them is ads that generate those things. And the point is, once you've created an impression there, Amazon will retarget you until you buy it. You know, I searched for an Instant Pot yesterday, and apparently you can't buy them in the UK, and the price on Amazon was £650.
Wow.
Because the stocks sold out over Christmas.
You can't buy an Instant Pot in the UK?
Nope.
Is that why? They don't sell them in the UK? Oh, they're sold out.
Because they're sold out.
So I'm going to recommend the Breville Fast Slow Cooker, which is better than an Instapot, in my opinion. But okay. That's what I have.
I searched for Instant Pot, and it was like Instant Pot 650.
That's crazy.
Because
it's called surge pricing.
$648.39. Which is like, what? The point of these things that they were cheap. As well as good pressure.
I can get you one for $58.98 overnight by Amazon Prime.
But would it ship to the UK?
Oh,
the thing weighs like a lot. You know?
Actually, that's a crock pot, like a knockoff of the Instant Pot. The actual Instant Pots are a little more pricey. I thought they were cheap too. Yeah, they're over $100.
No, they became a premium brand in the last 2 months.
Oh, that's so funny.
But the point I was making was I did that search and it was like, because we wanted to buy my son one, I was like, well, that's kind of crazy. And then every time I browse the web today, I see Instapot £650.
Wow. Oh, like, that's what you're – oh, I see what you're seeing.
It's the retargeting.
Retargeting.
Oh.
So the ad revenue they're getting is for that kind of ad insertions that they put everywhere
right.
else.
Right. I get it. Oh, that's interesting.
So it's not an Alexa, but also you know they have the other half of the ad thing. They can actually complete the sale and credit where it came from because they inject the ads into the page. And if you're a large media organization and you inject those kinds of ads, then you can get the I'm sure you say what it is, but you can it's like getting the Amazon referral fee, but a bit lower.
Right. $1 billion a quarter ain't bad.
Yeah. But I'm not quite sure how that works there. That may be some accounting trick as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming they're actually paying the sites they're injecting ads into.
What time do you want to get out of here, Jeff?
Oh, 6:15-ish.
Pretty soon, 20 minutes from now.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Well, what else should – there's so many stories. I can get out of the dystopia vein. If we could play.
I found it amazing that Tesla is the most popular automaker in Norway.
Yeah, because they have to go all electric by 2020, don't they?
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. I got a nice deal. I don't know who it was. If you're watching, thank you. Somebody put my name down as a referral for a Tesla. And they took delivery. And Tesla sent me, said, hey, thank you. You can get. I said, okay, I'll take it. One of those little the kids' Teslas that you drive around.
I want to see you drive it.
I'm getting a mini Tesla. Free.
You're kidding me.
No. It's like, wow. Anybody who's watching, want to buy a Tesla, make sure you mention me. I can have a whole fleet of mini Teslas. Driving all around town. Actually, that's something we're going to do when we're going to Japan in the spring. The hot thing in Japan now, I know it's in Tokyo and Osaka, is Mario Kart. You put on a Mario costume. It's a tour of Tokyo. and they give you a little Mario Kart, and you drive around town in little Mario Karts and Mario costumes. That's, I'm going to do that. I'm doing that.
Oh, Lord.
Throw table shows at each other?
Yeah. Yeah. It explains it because I was seeing all of these videos of people driving around Tokyo in Mario Karts, and I couldn't quite figure out why I was seeing all of these, and now I know. Here, I'll turn off the sound on this, but this is a big thing now. People do these tours of Tokyo.
How is that legal? How?
Well, you've seen all these weird things. People drive around in San Francisco, right? The little...
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
I guess can't imagine. It's all for tourism. Maricar.com. I can't wait. I love Japan. I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. It's better than driving around a Segway because you really look dopey on a Segway.
That's true. That's true. It's amazing they're still out there.
Yeah. So I've two related stories say that two things. Artificial intelligence can look at a picture of you and tell whether you're sick or a Republican.
or both.
So
is this joint sets?
No, they're not related. They're just two different stories.
All right, that was a line too easy. Don't get
it
mad at me.
It was too easy. I set you up. I set you up. So it's an analysis of images that are, you know, now we're getting some of the benefit of this. For instance, it can, how do you vote? They can look at your image and tell you, based on 50 million images and location data, how you're likely to vote. And then I saw one this morning that said they could tell if you're sick by looking at you.
I'm suspicious of these correlation things. It's like, okay.
AI, is there anything it can't do? I'm just trying to find happy stories.
Well, I also saw that I put up in the rundown that a theory that with Facebook and phone records, you could find people who are more connected to people. And if you inoculate them against a disease,
you
cut it off before. Now that's gonna be privacy stuff like crazy. But it's an example of how data can do.
That's awesome.
Potentially something good. Yeah.
I think Foursquare or Google tracking would be better than Facebook because people who have lots of friends on Facebook may not get out much.
Facebook is ditching the false news flag. I was curious what you would say about this one, Jeff.
Well, we people in this fake news world have been trying to get data from Facebook, and they have not ever delivered. But what was the impact of the flag? And clearly they're saying that this was not doing the job. Maybe
people read the story more.
Exactly. And the other truth was that all along, as soon as Facebook identified something that might be questionable and they sent it to the fact checkers, they stopped promoting it. So it already had the impact of not bringing traffic to it because Facebook wasn't promoting it. That's the issue. The flag was kind of meaningless. So now instead, Facebook is going to give you related content and see that study I quoted earlier in the show where being exposed to other news, as long as it's not, you know, trying to say, you idiot, this is what you should see. If it's just saying, here's some more choices, then it can have an impact and that's what Facebook ought to be doing.
The red flag that they were putting up next to stories made people believe the stories, not disbelieve them.
Because they don't like the institutions.
This proves it. Proves it. Because now, see what they're doing? They're pretending it's fake news. You see? That means it's true. Or they wouldn't be denying it.
Oh, yeah. No, there's the Snopes is funded by Soros to discredit the right wing meme.
Right.
Yeah, there's layers of
it's turtles all the way down, isn't it? It's just nothing you can do.
It is indeed.
A visit to Facebook's recently opened Center for Deleting Content. This is Motherboard.
What a fun place that will be.
In Essen, Germany, is the Center for Deleting Content.
And it's a separate company that's contracted to.
They have 400 employees deleting comments, photos, and videos that break Facebook's rules. So this is not GDPR. This is something else.
No. This is that German thing. This is the... Oh, wait. We have a new word. Netzwerkdurchsetz... Gesetzt.
And I just got Leistungsschutzrecht.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
Schutzrecht.
Netzwerkdurchsetzungsgesetz. gesetzt. I'm not there yet. I got to do it about 10 times before I get.
Wow, that's a tough word. What does it mean?
Durchsetzungsgesetzt. That was there. I'm going to speed it up. That means basically network enforcement law.
I guess it would be too much just to say the network enforcement law.
You have to make it a one. That's what it says. I mean, it's
yeah, but it's one word.
Repeat after me. Netz.
Netz.
Werk.
Werk.
Durch.
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 Setzungs.
Setzungs.
Gesetz.
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 There you go. You got it. That only took 5 minutes to get through one word.
It's Durchsetzungsgesetz. Okay.
I love German. What a language. God. Okay. So
there was a story that Twitter's changed their reporting abuse thing in Germany specifically just to ask you which bit of German law it's breaking.
Just give us a hint here. Which German law are we breaking? Oh, it's the Network Durchsetzungsgesetz. That's what it is. The Netzwerk Durchsetzungsgesetz.
Yeah, don't forget that S between the G and the G. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very important.
I've actually just got it. Hang on. I've got a screenshot for this. I'm going to post this somewhere.
Screenshot for what German law are we breaking? But is this only in Germany or are they saying it in the U.S.?
Germany. It's in Germany. Oh. So what's happening is a lot of comics, they're finding their stuff is not seen in Germany where it could be understood, but you can see it here.
But in Germany, it violates a law.
Yeah, so there's satirists who make reference to Hitler for the point of the satire.
You can't do that.
It's getting taken down.
Yeah.
It's getting taken down. There's a German satire magazine called Titanic, and they're having a hell of a time.
Well, well, well. All right, last call for stories.
Let's see here.
FCC is still working on its net neutrality repeal order. Yeah. More and more people are coming forward saying, my dead mother, Catherine Hepburn, Julie Andrews?
Rachel Maddow did a great segment last night about all the names.
All the fake names.
Yeah.
Who's doing that? That's what I want to know.
Well, a lot of the addresses were Russian.
Those dang Russians.
We're blaming everything on the Russians these days.
It does feel a little easy to blame the Russians.
It does. I agree.
They're not bad people. Putin's not the greatest, but you know they're a nice. It's a nice group of people over there. Many of my best friends are Russians. Most of them left Russia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What else is here?
Last call for news stories. Equifax basically got away scot free. Nothing. Politico has a story. After Equifax breach, anger but no action in Congress. White-hot bipartisan outrage, then hearings, and proposals that went nowhere. Are you surprised? No, I'm not.
No. So I'll tell you what I want. I see Nautilus, the new, reportedly a Samsung detachable Chromebook.
Yeah, well, now remember, the CES is coming up next week. We're going to see a lot of stuff there. Then there's Mobile World Congress February into March, and we're going to see a lot of this stuff there. Samsung, we're trying to figure out if Samsung's doing an event at Mobile World Congress. If they are, we'll cover it. But that's where they might announce something like this, a detachable Chromebook, codenamed Nautilus, with a Sony IMX camera sensor. What is that for? I don't know.
Still won't do the show well enough, but
it's a 16 megapixel. It's about the same camera as in the LG G6. It's a very good camera. Wow, that'd be very interesting.
Yeah,
Samsung makes really nice Chromebooks.
They do. My daughter uses almost exclusively now.
Yeah,
loves it.
Yeah, as does my daughter. Absolutely, and my son.
Really.
Our little son, Michael, the 15-year-old, uses a Chromebook in high school. I have a Pixel book, which I like. Did Jason ever get his back? I don't think he did. He's back on his old
Chromebook. Really?
I don't know. Maybe he just gave up and turned it in.
I'm liking mine.
I think it's very nice. I like it quite a bit, yeah. Is Amazon going to buy Target? No.
We did that.
We did that.
No, we did. No, we didn't do Amazon.
No, this is a new one. This is not the Apple buying Disney. No, this is a prominent analyst predicts Amazon will take over Target this year, which actually would make a lot of sense. Target, by the way, is one of the places you can shop on your Google Home.
That's right.
So, Gene Munster, though, is known for missing the boat sometimes. He's the analyst who predicts it. Target is the ideal offline partner for Amazon. I was in a Whole Foods yesterday. They have lockers, you know, that you can get your Amazon stuff delivered to. But I asked the clerk, she said, you know what most people use it for? To returns. You don't have to ship returns back. You just bring, put it in the locker. Scan the thing, put it in the locker.
Which saves everybody.
That sounds really good.
Saves it. Yeah. Because I don't mind having deliveries come to my house. I'd prefer it. But returns, now that's another matter. So Whole Foods, yep. Maybe Target next. That would make a lot of sense. A lot of brick-and-mortar stores. And I think Target's probably very affordable. Amazon has been ordered to stop luring customers based on misspelled searches for Birkenstock. Man, that's like saying I got candy in this van. Come here, kids.
Yeah.
German sandal maker Birkenstock filed an injunction complaining the online retailer had been using variations like Birkenstock or Birkenstock and buying the AdWords, luring in customers to buy shoes that aren't actually Birkenstocks. Low quality copies.
However, once you get to Amazon and you search for Birkenstocks, you can say people who like this also like this.
Yeah.
At the same point.
I love my Birkenstocks. Worn them ever since I was a hippie.
Yeah, you would.
I have a deep connection to Birkenstock. When we first moved to California, we bought the house of the Birkenstock, U.S. distributor of Birkenstocks. And in the garage was a mountain. I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of Birkenstock catalogs. And every one of them, you could put you'd get your foot wet and you put your foot on the back page of it and it makes an imprint of your foot and then you can order the shoe. And I just did that to a bunch of them just for fun. I was a kid. What did I know? Samsung might also announce its Galaxy S9 at Mobile World Congress. And according to Gordon Kelly, a contributor at Forbes, which means, you know, who knows?
Right.
Who knows who this guy is? That the final renders are coming out. It looks just like the Galaxy S8. Mm. Okay. Will it have a headphone jack is all I care about. There is Bixby button.
It would.
I would think this is the differentiator now, right?
It is now. It's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. I have to say, I took... So I brought a very expensive fancy camera on vacation in the Virgin Islands, and I brought a Pixel 2 XL. The pictures I took on this camera phone were the best. This
really?
Is the – there is no question in my mind the Pixel 2 XL camera is absolutely second to none. I mean stunning right out of the camera pictures of everything and very editable. I mean it really – they just came out fabulous. So – highly recommend the Pixel 2 XL camera. I mean, just the detail, the clarity. Look at this. By the way, there's a sunken ship and the trash. But the clarity, I mean, if I zoom in, it's just,
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Really good camera. This isn't, most of the shots were in bright light, so that might have something to do with it, but. There's a fish on the Barbie. There's my son taking a picture of a fish on the Barbie. It's kind of a meta commentary.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up because it's time for Jeff.
I got to go out to dinner with the family, yeah.
Where are you going, a fish restaurant?
A pizza place tonight. Tonight's for pizza.
All right, it's fun to do family stuff.
Oh, it is. Nice. It's fun, yes.
Yeah. Why don't you kick things off with the number of the week?
Oh, okay. Where'd it go? Where'd it go? There it is. I don't get this. I don't get this. So there's a new search engine. You know, those poor schmucks who come along all the time trying to think, I'll be the new Google. Supposedly it's a search engine to tell you what is missing. Founded in 2012. I had never heard of this. Had you? Million short?
No.
It cuts off the first million most popular sites and then
what a great idea.
Well, yes and no. there's a reason that the things are on top or on top.
So let me just see the. So it's the bottom million. Remove the top.
The bottom million.
So yeah. You can remove top 100, top 1,000, top 10,000. Let me remove the top. I'm going to search for myself and remove the top million results. There, kitchen counter stools on sale. My net worth foundation. Why did Leo Laporte get divorced with his wife?
See, don't you regret this now?
Yeah, no, it's just strange.
It's strange. It's really odd. So I thought that million short just amused me.
Yeah. I like it, though. I like it. Mr. Kevin Marks, you got a pick for us?
I'll go with my usual pick of IndieWeb events. There's an IndieWeb camp in Baltimore coming up on January 20 to 21st. So that's the weekend going to Baltimore. I think it's the first one we've had in Baltimore. And probably the first one we've had in that general region, I think. Any that far off the coast. It's the usual thing of 2 days where you spend sharing how to build websites with each other. So the day one is like a conversation day, and day two is a implementation day. It's the usual IndieWeb model. So if you're in that neighborhood, give that a look. Also, we've got homebrew website clubs next week on Wednesday and Thursday in various places in Europe and America. So if you go to indieweb.org and look at events, it'll be there at the top. And one of the things I've seen, one of the things I've seen in the last few weeks is a lot of people saying, okay, I really am fed up with Twitter. What else is out there? And starting to look at the IndieWeb toolkits that we've been gradually building up over the last few years. And one that's doing fairly well with this is micro.blog. Which is Manton Reese's site. He opened up signups recently. So it's built on the IndieWeb standards. You can just use it as a place to read and write, but also you can wire it up to your existing sites and feed them through as well. So it's an interesting one to look at. He's like sort of reinventing the sort of integrated reader blogging model.
Yeah, it's funny because. I when you talked about it maybe a year ago, I signed. It was Indiegogo. He crowdfunded it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I did it, and I've been on there ever since. And then I went back the other day because I can't remember why. And I've been posting all along because I was wise enough and forgot it to wire it into all my other stuff. So there's lots of content on there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cute. Micro.blog.
And it was only open to the people who'd funded it up until recently, but now there's a sign-up link as well. So give it a look.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'd like to get more people on it. And I'd like to get the president on it.
Russia.
I think that'd be fun. I have something that came out of the UK that I thought was really cool, and it came to my notice today because Mercedes-Benz announced they were going to adopt it in their car navigation systems going forward. It's a British company called What Three Words. Turns out you can divide the entire globe into 10 meter by 10 meter segments. There's trillions of them, and then assign three words to each of those. And for instance, if you wanted to visit the Twit Brick House, our three words are glow, walnut, and nasal. Glow, walnut, nasal. And then you can feed that into your Mercedes or send
Does the order matter?
Yes, because it's triangulating. It's a grid. So give me an address. Let's do the White House. The White House, Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C. is Kix Mirror Tops. And then if you have the app and you can get it on Android and iOS, you can put in any three words and it will then send that to Google Maps or Waze or Apple Maps and navigate you to that place because it turns it into coordinates, latitude and longitude coordinates. I just love it. It's very fun.
I brought this to the show about 3 or 4 years ago.
You did?
Yes. Yes. It's somewhere in the archives. It's there. Somebody I know.
In the archives. We've just been there before.
Well, Bobby Llewellyn tweeted this morning about it. He said, Elon, you should adopt it now that Mercedes is. I just think it's the coolest thing. So you knew all about it. We got to give this traction. It's a really good idea.
It isn't. I mean, the challenge is that it's not. It's more fragile than actual addresses, because if you misremember a word or you change the order, you end up somewhere entirely different, the other side of the earth. So its edit is a bit odd. Whereas there are other things that give you short ones that basically each letter is reducing the space by a factor of 26 or whatever.
So you can get it wrong, maybe, but still get close.
It depends on the use case.
Yeah. Let's see what.
All right, Jeff.
You're sort of wired into their dictionary, which is a bit weird. Unless they've changed it, but it was hard to actually work out what was going on without them keeping it up. I think
Big Ben is it pools it finishing nobody. Just saying. What three words? Jeff Jarvis is going to take off for pizza. Thank you for joining us, BuzzMachine.com.
Thank you.
And, of course, the University of New York will be back next week. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Kevin Marks, IndieWeb.org, and at Kevin Marks on the Twitter. See, we didn't keep you up too late this week. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate
That's
it.
That's not too bad. It's only 4 past 11. Cheers.
Have a good evening. We do This Week in Google. Not the best name for a show that really is as wide-ranging as this, but I warned you at the beginning. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday at about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, go to YouTube. Actually, best thing to do is go to twit.tv/live, and then you can choose from YouTube or Twitch or Ustream? Yeah, Ustream. Almost forgotten all the ways you can see us, but that's why you just go to twit.tv/live. If you're going to do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Always a lot of fun. The chat room, a big part of our efforts. And if you'd like to watch in studio, you can do that too, but please email tickets at twit.tv beforehand so we can make sure to put a seat out for you. We will be back next week. If you want to watch on demand anytime at your convenience, twit.tv/twig, or use your favorite podcast app and subscribe. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.